All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is April 7th, 2026. It's been a minute. We're going to try things a little bit differently. We're trying to ease back into the morning show. We're going to be doing these on a pre-recorded basis for a little while, hopefully getting back to doing live shows very soon here. But for the time being, our top story this morning, private credit. Once again, Barings is the latest fund to limit investor withdrawals, capping them at 5% after requests reach as high as 11%. They're now joining the ranks of BlackRock, Blackstone, Blue Owl, Morgan Stanley, Ares, Apollo, KKR, and Cliffwater. But who's counting? That is a lot of funds have gated redemptions now. Now, the interesting thing about Barings, this fund's not that big. It's about a $5 billion fund, but it's who one of their biggest holders is. That's an interesting note about this story in Barings. Possibly the incestuous relationships between private credit funds now playing a role in the series of redemptions here. That story continues to get worse. And also along the lines of private credit, we've got Blue Owl Capital was back in the news yesterday. That stock hit an all-time low after that story that I did a video about last week showing the phenomenal increase in redemptions, reaching as high as, I think, 41% one of their funds reached. But the interesting thing about Blue Owl Capital this morning is that they have hit an all-time low in the stock. And there's another story about Blue Owl Capital stock that may be a factor here. Things may be about to get a whole hell of a lot worse for Blue Owl. And I realize that's saying a lot because things are already pretty bad over at that shop. Now, the other big story going on this morning, shares of the health insurers are absolutely skyrocketing this morning. They've had a rough run of it. Health insurers were down big. You may recall several months ago, there were proposals for a very small increase and the rates for Medicare Advantage plans, and the health insurers have just had a just dreadful run in their shares. Well, this morning we got the final rates for 2027 that these insurers are going to be paid for Medicare Advantage plans, and they were lower than they've been in prior years, but not nearly as bad as they feared. And so those stocks are doing phenomenally this morning. That's going to be a little bit of a tailwind for the Dow as the health insurers make up a lot of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Another big story going on this morning, we've got shares of Broadcom are climbing after they signed deals with both Google and Anthropic for their custom chips. Competition is getting stiff for NVIDIA out there, so that one is having a good morning. We've also got some good news for farmers. Hey, this is interesting here. John Deere has reached a settlement in their right to repair lawsuit, a $99 million settlement. It looks like finally farmers are going to get a break here. John Deere has been getting a lot of flack from their customers, basically forcing them to use John Deere authorized dealers to repair any of their farm equipment. Farmers like to repair their own gear. They weren't allowing them access to the tools necessary to do that. So it looks like there is some relief for the farmers here this morning. We've got a story about underwater mortgages in China and all the tap dancing Chinese banks are doing to avoid defaults and foreclosures. Pretty interesting there. What if we had a housing crisis and we all just kind of like pretended that it wasn't going on? Well, that's the social experiment that's currently underway in China. We'll see how that works out for them. And last but not least, we've got a crazy story about a bank in Mauritius that collapsed last month. This one went under the radar. Apparently, it was caused by a nickel fraud. Who had Mauritius banks collapsing because of nickel fraud on their 2020s bingo card? Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning, and it is very good to be back. So for the first time in many moons, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button, because hopefully we're going to be back to doing this one every single day now. And right now, the S&P 500 is down by about 33 points or 0.5% lower. A lot of that coming over the last couple of hours here, starting around 6 a.m. Look, we're in this like on again, off again, like moving goalpost of deadlines with the Iranians on, you know, 1 minute the war is going to be over next week. The next minute, all hell and, you know, fire and fury and all that stuff. I'm trying to tune out some of that noise and just look for the price signals that the market is sending right now. We did hit targets on Karg Island last night, And President Trump is talking about seizing Iranian oil this morning. We've also got bridge and power plant day is the latest arbitrary deadline that's coming up here. But this market's relentless optimism that the war is going to come to an end any day now still seems to be in the driver's seat, even though shares are down just a couple of points this morning. We've got the Dow is lowered by 182 points or 0.39%. The Dow is going to be helped out by the insurer stocks this morning. And the NASDAQ leading the way lower off by 180 points or 0.75% lower. We've got the U.S. dollar is pretty much unchanged this morning, lower by 5 basis points at 99.96, just hanging out barely below that 100 mark. Looking over at interest rates, we've got the long end of the yield curve is a little bit higher. The rest is red this morning. The 30-year yield is at 4.907. That's higher by almost 2 basis points. The 10-year yield is pretty much unchanged at 4.336. That's higher by a fraction of a point. The 2-year is at 3.848, lower by a fraction of a point. And the 1-month is at 3.683, down by a half a point here. Interest rates not really going anywhere this morning. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're at 68,253, as shown on Coinbase here. Off by about 600 bucks from yesterday, Bitcoin continues to trade in this range, high 60s, low 70s, where it's been since early February. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got some red and some green. Spot gold's at $4,651. That's higher by a buck. June gold futures, however, down by $8 or 0.17% at $4,676. Meanwhile, we've got spot silver is at $71.70. That's lower by $1.09 or 1.5% lower. May COMEX silver futures are at $71.75. Also down by about a buck and a dime or 1.5% lower. But you know what? I still like the shiny. Copper's lower by about 0.38%. Platinum down by 1.5%. Palladium down by 1.1%. Crude oil, we'll look at that chart in a minute here. We're at $115.54 for May WTI futures. Brent is a few bucks behind at $111 for June Brent futures. And natural gas is at $2.83 here. That's higher by a couple of pennies. Taking a look at the oil chart, guys, the pattern is pretty clear. Despite the on-again, off-again headlines and peace talks and, you know, one day it's fire and fury, the next day give peace a chance. The trend is pretty clear here. Oil continues to grind up and to the right, currently at $115.57. That's the highest we've been since that crazy Monday when prices spiked to 120 bucks. Only to crash lower by the end of the day. So oil still going up here. Now, we've got some interesting things are going on over the last few weeks, pretty much across the world. We've seen a lot of like price controls and throttling and demand destruction. A lot of interesting headlines in the Pacific countries in Europe. Everybody's scrambling to get their hands on oil supply. It's been a pretty nutty couple of weeks. We got this one in the Philippines, courtesy of Polymarket this morning. Take a look at this picture. Now, this is gasoline prices. I believe this is in liters and this is in Filipino pesos. Don't pay so much attention to this specific number here. The interesting thing about this picture shown on your screen here is the fact that they put this paper one on there. Maybe some of you older melon heads out there remember the stories from the 1970s. It was before my time. But there was a lot of problems back in the 70s in the gas crisis because back then gas pumps only had 2 digits and they had to add the third. Well, it looks like we've come full circle and we're doing that in the Philippines now where they've had to add the one to the price board. So yeah, that's a very 2020s photograph we've got here. Moving on, let's talk about the main stories of the morning. We're back in private credit space here. Bearings, caps, redemptions. As private credit holders seek 11%, another one of these headlines. A $4.9 billion Barings private credit fund capped redemptions after investors asked to pull out 11.3% of the shares in the first quarter. Barings Private Credit Corp is paying out less than half of the request, capping withdrawals at 5%, the fund said in a filing on Monday. That means the fund held on to about $180 million of money that investors had wanted back. Stop me if you've heard this one, right? I mean, we've seen this over and over again. Barings is just the latest here. But the interesting thing about this story, this is what caught my attention here in Bloomberg in the middle of the article. One of the biggest holders of the Barings vehicle is Cliffwater LLC, whose $33 billion private credit interval fund is the largest of its kind. Investors asked to pull 14% from Cliffwater's flagship fund in the first quarter and were capped at 7%. So they're not spelling this out specifically here, but I believe what they're trying to say, or you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it looks like the unusually high requests for redemptions in Cliffwater has caused Cliffwater to request redemptions from Barings, which is why Barings is now gating their redemption. So you've got one private credit fund buying another private credit fund. And when one gates redemptions, the other has to gate redemption. So you can see the incestuous relationship between these funds here. You know, if you bought into this Barings fund, you may have not realized that you were actually buying into the Cliffwater fund at the same time and vice versa. So things in private credit still getting worse here as this blow up continues. And let's talk about Blue Owl here. Blue Owl stock closes at a record low amid private credit exodus. This was just yesterday. Shares of Blue Owl Capital closed at a record low on Monday, capping weeks of declines fueled by mounting concerns over the health of the $1.8 trillion private credit market. The stock fell 1.4% to close at 845, below its previous nadir set in late 2022. It hit a record intraday low on Thursday after the firm said it would limit redemptions from two of its private credit funds following a surge in withdrawal requests. Blue Owl went public in May 2021 through a SPAC merger with the Owl Rock Capital Group and Deal Capital Partners. So Blue Owl stock hitting an all-time low. It's even lower this morning, trading at 8:43 ahead of the opening bell. It's about 8:56 a.m. right now. But the interesting thing about this one, that Blue Owl keeps heading lower, down 43% year to date, is remember this one from back in February in Blue Owl. Blue Owl founders pledged $1.9 billion stake before stock plunge. Blue Owl's co-CEOs, which, by the way, you guys know me, anytime I'm looking at companies and I see that they have co-CEOs, I run. Unclear leadership is a major red flag for me. I never touch a company that has co-CEOs. That being said, BlueRock's co-CEOs have borrowed against their $1.9 billion stake in the company. That is now not worth $1.9 billion. It's worth a lot less. And the point here is, if the stock goes low enough, you could have what is essentially a margin call from their lenders. If they start to get worried that the collateral has dropped too much in value, they could demand that these guys put up additional collateral, or they could just sell Blue Owl stock before it goes any lower. And these guys own, I believe it's something around 15 or 16% of the company here. So there could be some significant downward pressure on Blue Owl shares that's about to hit if this stock keeps going lower than the CEO's collateral shares. They will get sold as well, pushing shares even lower. All right, now on to another big one this morning. Health insurers secured a better Medicare Advantage rate for 2027, and their stocks are soaring. You know, the healthcare names have been brutally beaten down over these last couple of months. So a little silver lining to that big gray cloud for them. Shares of health insurers rallied in pre-market trading Tuesday after the U.S. government improved the initial Medicare Advantage rate increase for next year. The growth rate of 2.48% for 2027 is still lower than the finalized rate increases of 5.06% that they got in 2026 and 3.70% in 2025. So 2.48 is the number they're getting, down significantly. I mean, less than half of what they got last year in rate increases, but it could have been a lot worse. Investors were shocked in late January when the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services proposed a rate increase of just 0.09%. That's significantly lower than the proposed rate increase of 4.33% for 2026. And the proposed rate often comes in lower than the final rates. So 2.48%. is not good. It's the lowest they've gotten in a long time. But if you consider the alternative was this 0.09%, now you can understand why shares of Humana are up 10.16% ahead of the opening bell here, trading at $201. Although let's put that in perspective, the shares were down about 29% this year. You can see that big gap down that they had in January when that 0.09% rate was first proposed. So a little bit of a relief rally going on in Humana here. United Health, pretty much the same thing. That stock is up 7.8% here, trading at $303.85. That's after taking a big plunge back in January on that same headline. So that'll put some upward pressure on the Dow this morning. We've also got news from Broadcom. Their shares jump before the bell as the chipmaker agrees to Google and Anthropic deals. And we're still doing these AI data center chip deals, huh? I guess we've got a few more months of headlines like that ahead of us. Shares in Broadcom rose 3.7% in pre-market trading on Tuesday after the chip designer announced it would produce future versions of an AI chip for Google and signed an expanded deal with Anthropic. The latter deal will give the AI startup access to about 3.5 gigawatts worth of computing capacity, drawing on Google's AI processors and providing some relief for the share price. Broadcom stock has endured a tough start to 2025, falling almost 10% year to date, as investors have become increasingly jittery around the bull case for technology stocks. It has also been caught up in the maelstrom of wider market caused by the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran that began in February of 2028. So Broadcom signing a deal with Google and Anthropic to put those TPUs, which Broadcom is going to be making, into Anthropic's data centers, which may or may not get built because apparently half of the proposed data centers aren't even under construction yet and are probably going to get canceled or delayed based on some recent articles in Bloomberg. But for now, Broadcom shares are up about 3.4% ahead of the opening bell, trading at $325.45. And you can see this is going back about a year, Broadcom share price here. And it looks a lot like the NVIDIA chart, gone a whole bunch of nowhere since the end of August. And we got good news for farmers this morning. Deere settles U.S. right to repair lawsuit with $99 million fund and repair commitments. U.S. agriculture equipment maker Deere on Monday agreed to pay $99 million into a settlement fund for farms and farmers that are part of a class action over costs and access to repairs. The case is part of a broader scrutiny in the U.S. over so-called right to repair practices, with regulators and plaintiffs arguing that some manufacturers limit competition by controlling access to repair tools and software. The settlement fund covers eligible plaintiffs who paid Deere's authorized dealers for repairs to large agriculture equipment from January 2018, according to a document filed on Monday in federal court. In the settlement, Deere also agreed to make available to farmers for 10 years the digital tools required for maintenance, diagnosis, and repair of large agricultural equipment, including tractors, combines, and sugarcane harvesters, the filing showed. The proposed accord requires a judge's approval. The settlement addresses the issues raised in the 2022 complaint and brings the case to an end with no finding of wrongdoing, Deere said in a separate statement. All right, so this is something of a punt here. They're not really solving the issue. This is a 10-year hiatus in the right to repair issue. We're going to give you $99 million into this fund if you feel like you were overcharged for maintenance. We're going to let you fix your own stuff for 10 years. After that, well, they didn't admit any wrongdoing, so it looks like we're going to be right back where we started. But for now, John Deere stock down a little bit here, $571. That's off by about $4 or 0.71%. John Deere stock has had a pretty good year, up 33.8% over the last 12 months. And check out this story in China. You know, we haven't talked about the Chinese housing collapse in a long time here on this channel, but this is this thing that's been going on and everybody's just kind of like pretending it's not happening. Well, it is. It's not going away. Mortgages are funny like that. Underwater mortgages force China's banks to get more creative. Lenders are trying to prevent defaults and foreclosures that risk deepening the country's housing crisis. China's unrelenting housing downturn is forcing the country's banks to confront a thorny issue. Sinking real estate values are pushing millions of mortgages underwater, increasing the risk of losses for lenders and property owners. Behind the scenes, China's bankers and officials are getting creative to contain the fallout. Whenever you hear about creativity in finance, it's typically some form of masking subprime lending, and this story is no different. Several state-owned banks have approached cash-strapped borrowers and offered them payment holidays on their mortgages for as long as 2 years, according to people familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified discussing the firm's policies. Hey, would you like to not pay your mortgage for 2 years? Sure, sign me up. Apparently, that's what's going on in China. Some lenders are working with individual customers to find buyers for their homes instead of calling defaults and foreclosing on the properties. Local courts across the country have slowed the pace of accepting cases involving defaulted mortgages to limit the volume of forced property sales, according to the People. Some courts have even suspended or limited the number of litigation cases that banks can file for residential mortgage defaults. So they're just like, you're not allowed to foreclose. We're only going to allow so many at a time. they're just pretending like nobody's pretending that people aren't missing their mortgage payments when they are. The move underscores how China's local institutions are working to limit the damage of a years-long property crisis that shows no signs of coming to an end. They also raise the question of whether official non-performing mortgage ratios, which have persistently stayed around 1%, gag me, for big banks, despite rising defaults, only hint at the true scale of the problem. In other words, they're lying about how many people aren't paying their mortgages. These banks are in big trouble, and they're just not reporting accurate numbers. Yikes. You can only hide this stuff for so long. Sooner or later, problems are going to start. And if you scroll down here a little bit, you can kind of see, and again, I highly recommend this article, guys. There's a lot of anecdotes and stories about what they're doing with people, offering them 2 years without payments. But banks haven't been able to avoid foreclosures entirely. Although the process in China is slow and complicated, less than a quarter of the foreclosed properties that were put up for auction last year ended up being sold, according to China Index Holdings. That is huge, because the banks are foreclosing on some of these properties, but the banks are being stuck holding the assets after they foreclose, which means these banks are eating huge losses, holding assets that are not worth the money they loaned out to buy them. They're unable to sell those assets, which means they're worth even less than they're claiming on their balance sheets. And they're just pretending like this isn't happening, reporting less than 1% delinquency rates on their loans. It is obviously all one big lie here. Across the country, the number of foreclosed properties listed for sale on online platforms and auction websites peaked at close to 800,000 in 2023. That's according to figures compiled by the data provider. They declined in 2024 when courts began slowing down the pace of acceptance and slipped to around 719,000 in 2025. So people are missing their mortgage payments. They're being allowed to go 2 years without paying. The courts are not letting the banks foreclose en masse. The few foreclosures that they can get through, only 1 in 4 is actually being sold. Where are the losses living? They're being hidden on the balance sheets of these banks that are lying, claiming their delinquencies are only 1%. It's obviously not the case. So I think there is a reckoning in store for China's banks. I think you can only avoid that for so long, even in a place like China, where they control the flow of information like that, like they do. Sooner or later, this is going to come back to haunt them. And last one of the day, Trifigura fraudster Gupta linked to Mauritian bank collapse. This story is nuts. I mean, this is an older story, the story about the fake nickel, but it reaching the bank in Mauritius, that's news to me. And some of the numbers and percentages here are crazy. The businessman who masterminded a huge nickel fraud against Trifigura Group was named by Mauritius as the ultimate beneficiary of toxic loans that led to the collapse of a local lender. Pratik Gupta and entities linked to him received a total of 7.9 billion rupees, that's $168 million, from Silver Bank, in which his wife, Ginny Gupta, held a 75% share. Premier and Finance Minister, something I definitely can't pronounce, told lawmakers on Tuesday. So that's just lovely. This guy did this $168 million nickel fraud, and he borrowed the money from a bank that his wife owns. No conflict of interest there, right? I'm sure rigorous underwriting standards were employed, as they always are. Silver Bank was put into receivership in March. Oh, good, the bank failed due to a lack of takeover interest, and the lender was previously placed under auditor control and revealed non-performing loans of 8.1 billion rupees out of a total loan portfolio of 8.3 billion rupees. That's what's amazing here. The bank's entire loan book was made up of loans to the owner's husband. And of course, he committed a giant fraud with those loans, so they all went bad. The entire loan book was worthless. And it failed a bank. This is just crazy. Ginny Gupta's shareholding was in spite of a Mauritian Banking Act rule that states no single shareholder should own more than 10%. Well, then how did she end up with 75% of it? I guess we just don't ask those questions in Mauritius. Except without the prior approval of the Bank of Mauritius, according to Ramgulam, the guy I couldn't pronounce. So it looks like the central bank may have signed off on this lady buying up such a big share in the bank. Pratik Gupta was in January found guilty by an English judge of perpetrating fraud on a grand scale against Trifigura. That's all losses of almost $600 million after it was discovered that containers of nickel it had bought from Gupta, in fact, contained low-value substitutes. like raw iron and scrap metal and other junk being substituted as bars of nickel. So that resulted in big losses for Trafigura, and it failed the silver bank in Mauritius. Gotta love it, guys. It is the golden age of fraud. Well, that's about all we got for us. Normally, this is the point in the show where I would go through the super chats. But as I mentioned earlier, guys, we're doing these pre-recorded for the time being. We hope to be back doing these lives very soon. But in the meantime, I appreciate all the messages, get well and well wishes that I got from you guys. Thank you very much. It meant a lot to me to read all of those. Sorry to have messed with your morning routine for the last couple of weeks, but hopefully we will put this all behind us very soon. But in the meantime, if you wouldn't mind hitting that like button, and you new guys, hit that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. Thank you so much for all the support of the channel. Thank you to my magnanimous melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.